Morning Drive, ESPN 102.5 The Game. If you miss any of the show, we have moved our on-demand audio to Apple and Spotify. Search Morning Drive in Apple or Spotify, or log on to thegamenashville.com to find our daily audio rate review. And Derek?
Subscribe.
That's right. I saved the best one for you.
Absolutely.
Derek Mason, Braden Gall, Munson producing back there behind the glass. D-Mace Dissection coming up in about 30 minutes. We got Greg Wyshynski from ESPN, who's been all over this NHL story, and we'll ask him about the Preds, of course, as well, as they win last night 3-1 over San Jose, now 5-1-2 in their last eight games, sort of righting the ship as well. We'll go behind enemy lines, and we'll talk with Aaron Wilson of the Houston Chronicle in hour number four. But I wanted to ask you about something, because we talked a lot about this last week as it pertains to the Tennessee Titans. Just absolutely crushing people. The offense has been great. You know what they haven't needed? Even though they've gotten big plays, and it's part of the reason they beat the Chiefs, it's part of the reason they beat the Colts, they needed a couple of big plays on special teams. Against Jacksonville, against Oakland, they didn't need special teams. Here's my concern, and I want to know if you think John Robinson has handled this correctly or not. The Tennessee Titans are dead last right now in field goal percentage in the NHL. They are below 50% in field goal percentage. They are 47% on the year. They're 8-for-17 in kicking field goals, which is atrocious. You know, the Houston Texans are like 20th in the NHL, or in the NHL, in the NFL. It'd be weird if the Houston Texans were in the NHL.
Yeah, you're right, man.
20th in the NFL in field goal percentage, and they're at three quarters. They're at 76%. So you can see the drop off from where the Titans are and where every other team in the NFL is. Is it possible? Are they good enough on offense and defense right now, even with the injuries on in the secondary, to continue this streak and this trend without a field goal kicker who can be dependable? Or is it going to cost them?
Oh, man. Eventually, you're going to have to you're going to play in a tough game. You're going to play in a game where you're not beating someone in the second half or fourth quarter by more than 14 points. It hasn't been that way the last couple of weeks or so. But you just assume it will be like that versus Houston. It will be like that versus New Orleans. And you need to count on your kicker. And right now, Ryan Succop, after his injury, he has not been good whatsoever. And I know
the leg strength is clearly not
there. I know Mike Vrabel said, well, it's, you know, it, when you miss a field goal, it typically, you know, basically said it's the snapper, the holder, and then the kicker.
Yep.
You know, everybody has a hand sort of in it. And you can look at Succop's miss this past weekend, and you can say, well,
it was a little bit of everybody.
Little bit of everybody. But he just hadn't been the same kicker since he's come back from injury. Clearly, like you said, he doesn't have the leg strength anymore. And you just don't want that to be a reason why you end up losing a game and potentially put yourself out of the playoffs because of a situation that could have been dealt with early on. Now, the last kicker that had, he started to miss toward he missed what his last couple of field goals, and then Ryan Succop comes back just in time.
Santos,
because Santos was great at the beginning, and then all of a sudden, you know, he just for some odd reason started missing field goals, and he missed some critical field goals that cost them games. Ultimately, so they had to make a change when Succop was finally healthy enough. But it seems like Succop is having those same type problems. And you don't want to be, again, you don't want to be in a situation like the Indianapolis Colts where you try to kick her out there and you are crossing your fingers hoping they make it.
Yeah, most everybody in the NFL is at 75% or higher. Mm-hmm. And if Cairo Santos had been at 75% that day against Buffalo, he went 0-for-4. If he had been at 75%, 3-for-4. They would have won the game.
Exactly.
So I don't know if keeping Cairo Santos was the right thing to do, but should John Robinson have gone out and got another piece somewhere along the way? Now, here's the issue I have with this, sort of like the quarterback problem around the NFL this year. There's just a lack of good quarterback play, right? Mm-hmm. Like, they're just not walking around the planet Earth right now. Like, you can't just go sign. Like, I know Devlin Hodges is somehow figuring out a way to win for Pittsburgh, but that's mostly because of the defense. You can't just go find a quarterback and plug him in and win NFL games. Like, that's not how it works. Are kickers in the same? Are we just at a place where kicking is just that difficult of a skill set to find? and that high of a premium that John Robinson has looked around and he just says, no, Ryan Succop's still my best option.
It could be. You're absolutely right. It just, for some reason, and I could be wrong, and I would love to, you know, see the data on, you know, the last year to compare to, say, you know, 10 years ago, 15 years ago. Because it just seems like the moment they pushed the extra point back, everything just started to go.
And so why would that affect field goals? Like, it makes no sense.
I have no idea, but it just seems like the minute they pushed that back, something happened.
Kickers are soft mentally?
I don't know if they started to, if they tilted the field a little bit, you know, or tilted the goalposts, or are we just noticing it more? The kickers are missing.
47%, though, the Titans or whatever this year, like that.
That's low. That is
atrocious.
Bad. Yeah, that is bad.
That's college work. That's college bad.
Or maybe they're not, you know, they're not, I don't know, but it just seems like, you know, that this part of the football game or your team is not as automatic as it used to be.
No. You know. And or maybe, like you said, we have no idea. We can't put our finger on it. Uh-huh. Again, just like the quarterback issue this year where there's just been a bunch of injuries. Mm-hmm. And so we're just seeing a bunch of replacement guys play at a lot of different places. I mean, again, Teddy Bridgewater came in and was very successful. Ryan Tannehill's a backup and now a starter and has been unbelievably good. Amongst the best quarterbacks in the NFL this year. Shocking to everybody. You know, Mason Rudolph and Devlin Hodges have both won games for a Steelers team that's in the playoffs. Mm-hmm. Like, we've seen backups be successful, and then we've seen backups be atrocious, right? Like, just guys that weren't very good at all. And it just is one of those years that there's more injuries at the quarterback position than we've ever had before in the NFL. Maybe it's just one of those years where, or maybe we're in a couple year stretch here where it's just, hey, they're just not as good right now. There's not as much talent. There's not as many good, but I just feel like we could be able to, like, you should be able to find kickers, I feel like.
Yeah,
and maybe I'm just wrong about that.
You should. And, you know, the Titans thought they had one in Ryan Succop. And, you know, before the injury, he was pretty good. But it just seems like after the injury, he hasn't been the same kicker. And you just hope that it doesn't hurt you down the line. It doesn't hurt you in these three games where you need to win at least two out of the three, and the two needs to be against your division foe, the Houston Texans. You just hope that a field goal either missed early in the game or missed late in the game doesn't cost you the game.
And when Succop missed this past weekend, it was tied at 21.
Yeah.
What happens if that's the end of the second half instead of the end of the first half?
You're right.
So here's my thought on the reason I bring this up is, there's pretty much a 0% chance. Like, there's 0% chance they're going to blow all three of these teams out. Mm-hmm. Like they did Jacksonville or Oakland.
Exactly.
Right? Maybe one time. Maybe one of these three games down the stretch, the Titans kind of continue this ridiculous level of play, and they blow let's say it's this weekend. They blow the Texans out. There's a good chance that at least one, if not two, of these games is going to be very close. Right?
Uh-huh.
So if it's going to be close, you know you've got a great punter. You're third in the NFL in punting. You know Kern's amazing and he's great. The punt return game is not particularly strong right now, but, you know,
none of the returns are strong.
Right. The difference between 7 yards per return and 9 yards per return is like the difference between 26th in the NFL and like 5th in the NFL. And, like, mm-hmm. we're talking about 2 or 3 yards in terms of field position. So it's not that big of a deal. But punting is important in field goal. Field goal kicking seems to be the biggest one, and it's also probably the most glaring weakness of the Titans team. Now, the Titans give up too many sacks. They take too many penalties on defense. There's some other issues. The secondary is banged up with injuries right now. But I do feel like special teams, while they were a huge part of the success of this run for the Tennessee Titans, you cannot depend on blocked field goals every weekend. And you can't
fake punts.
And fake punts. And you can't depend on a field goal kicker making less than 50% if you're going to make the playoffs and win games. One or two of these games down the stretch are going to be very close.
Yeah, and they're going to need their field goal kicker to kick a game-winning field goal, a game-tying field goal.
Does this mean they should have addressed it in preseason or in the draft or something like crazy like that?
I mean, they're going to have to address it. Well, because Succop was injured right. during the preseason. Yeah, you're right.
Could there have been a greater sense of urgency about the position?
Yes, but I'm sure they felt that, okay, the injury is not that serious. He'd be back. He'd be fine. But when he came back, he wasn't. And do they address it this offseason? Absolutely. They address it this offseason. But luckily for the Titans, they haven't needed the field goal kicker these past six games or seven games
right.
they've been in. But, you know, I've always said it's better to have and not need than need to not have. You know, and right now they're probably at a point where they don't have a guy that's reliable as a field goal kicker because, you know, regardless of what you say,
Suck up
ain't reliable.
It doesn't make me feel good when they work, when they try
when
him
they try them out. Yeah. It's like cross your fingers. I hope you make it.
It's surrender cobra everywhere.
Yeah,
like everybody's living room is just with their hands on their heads, going,
it's like,
"Come on,
hoping
dude.
He make it."
NFL fans, don't miss Nashville's best pregame show. Start your morning off with the kickoff from 7 to 9:30 a.m. followed by the NFL pregame show featuring Jared Stillman, Floyd Reese, and Chris Sanders live from George Jones downtown on 2nd Avenue this Sunday from 9:30 to 11:30 a.m. prior to the Titans taking on the Houston Texans. The NFL pregame show is brought to you by Wholesale Inc., powered by RumbleOn.com, Kubota Tractors, Middle Tennessee Kubota Dealers, and Boomba's Craft Pizza and Tap House. And there are two stats I really like the Titans' chances this weekend, which is probably bad news for Titans fans. But there are two really important stats that as I was digging into the matchup yesterday that I found that I think Titans fans should be really, really excited about. So we'll get to that in just a few minutes. Also, the text line is open, 615-737-1025, as well as at 1025 underscore MD. That's the Twitter account, at 1025 underscore MD. Tell us why your significant other deserves a $100 gift card to a Moments Peace Salon and Day Spa. Tell us why they deserve to be pampered and, you know, treated all nice and fresh and clean. Just tell us why. Somebody in your life, we've already got a few responses already talking about how, you know, hey, mom stays home with the baby. She's up every single night, and I go work third shift, and she needs a little refreshment right
now. This is hard, man. This is going to be a tough one.
It's going to tug at the heartstrings, man.
Yeah, this is going to be a tough one. If I had a lot of these, I'd definitely give them to each and every one of you guys. Because these are a lot of heartfelt ones that it's going to be a difficult one today.
There's a lot of people that deserve it. And so,
absolutely.
So be funny, creative, tug at the heartstrings. If you make us laugh and cry, those are good positive things that will get you to the top of the list. So tell us why your significant other deserves that $100 gift card to a Moments Peace Salon and Day Spa. We'll give that. We'll announce that again in the final hour of the show around 9:45 like we do each and every day this week and next week. But you got to be on the Twitter at 1025 underscore MD. Tell us why your significant other deserves it. The two stats you need to know that will get you excited if you're a Tennessee Titans fan. We'll do that when we return right here on Morning Drive. Derek knows every word of this song.
Man, you can't beat an LL Cool J. Yeah.
So do I.
I do not, but I do like that song.
We've been waiting and debating for oh so long, just starving like Marvin for a Kujay song.
Man, that was the joint back in the day. Man, was the joint.
Derek is so excited he just broke his headphones.
God, that was the joint back in the day.
What year did this come out?
Because I make a lot of money and your boyfriend don't. That's also a line on this song. That's a disrespectful.
That's mean, man.
Disrespectful. Like, gosh, what are you gonna say after that?
Nothing. Morning Drive, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Derek Mason, Braden Gall, LL Cool J producing back there. Two stats I want to bring up as I was diving into the Houston Texans a little bit, and we'll talk with Aaron Wilson from the Houston Chronicle coming up in the final hour. A D-Mace dissection coming up in just a few minutes. Mm-hmm. Two numbers I wanted to throw out at you and see what you thought about the Houston Texans. Have 26 sacks on the season.
Mm-hmm.
That is 27th in the NHL. They are not pressuring the quarterback.
Whatsoever.
They also have the worst third down defense in the entire league. 32nd in the league at 48%. They are allowing almost half of their opponent's third down conversions. The Titans under Marcus Mariota, of course, not only were they not protecting the quarterback, that led to a lot of third and longs. And Marcus was in third and longs, and this is not an excuse for Marcus, but I'm sorry, you're not going to convert on third down, you're not going to score points, and you're not going to sustain drives when you're in third and 15 all the time. Mike Vrabel complained about it all the first month and a half of the season. The sacks were atrocious. Taylor Lewan wasn't playing in the first four games. But the Texans don't appear, after the Titans have been amazing on third down the last few weeks and gave up no sacks this week to the Oakland Raiders.
Mm-hmm.
It appears, when you look at that particular matchup, now I know the Texans are strong in other departments, As far as offensively, they're going to score a boatload of points. They've got great receivers. Deshaun Watson's spectacular. I get all that. It's going to be a tough matchup. Dean Pease has got his hands full this week. But on the other side, there's nothing about this Texans team that scares me defensively. They just gave up 38 points to Drew Lock. They're not pressuring the quarterback, and they're giving up all kinds of third down conversions. They're worse than the NFL on third downs. Those two numbers tell me that the Titans, when they run Derrick Henry, if Derrick Henry's fully healthy, are going to set themselves up for success because they're not going to give up sacks, and they'll have manageable third downs. Am I crazy?
No, you're not crazy.
That's good. That's good.
Yeah.
I'm comfortable.
This is going to be a game that you know, if you whoever converts, obviously whoever converts third down will win. Whoever converts the most third downs will win. But more importantly, I think for the Tennessee Titans, because of their secondaries banged up, this bend but not break philosophy is going to have to kick in really hard. Because if Adoree Jackson's not 100%, if Sims, even though Smith has played well, if Sims can't come back, then now you're putting a lot of stress again on those guys up front to get to Deshaun Watson. And getting to him, he has this innate ability to extend the play and buy himself a little bit more time. So because your secondary is banged up, this bend but not break principle that the Titans, you know, they have sort of, it's going to have to really kick in this game, because we can't expect them to shut down Houston's passing game. We just can't, now, especially not with a banged up secondary.
Because on the other side, the Texans are one of the best offenses in the NFL on third down.
Exactly.
And the Titans have not been as good. Now they're getting better.
Yeah.
Because again, I expect a lot more third and fours, third and fives, third and sixes, third and sevens. And don't be surprised if the Titans are able to convert on those. But the Texans can do it too.
Yeah. And that's why they got, from a defensive standpoint, they got to shut down Houston's run game. And it's not like Houston has this prolific run game. And on the other side, the Titans, they must pick up, you know, at least on first down, they must pick up positive yardage, 3-4 yards on first down. They're able to do that with Derrick Henry. So when you get third down, it's third and manageable, third and four, third and five, third and six. And then keep Houston in third and nine, third and 10, third and 15. It's harder to complete third and 15s or third and 10s than it is third and five, third and four.
Mm-hmm.
So you have one team that's good at it and one team that struggles. So, yeah, it's going to be a hard-fought game. It's going to be a good game. But the Titans, they haven't faced in all of their victories since Tannehill has become starting quarterback, there has been this deficiency with the teams that they've been playing, like huge,
like glaring holes.
Yeah, glaring holes that they have taken advantage.
Like the Chargers defense was totally injured and not very good.
Absolutely.
The Jameis Winston gives you the football like four times a game.
Yeah.
I mean, no question about that. Now, Carolina was playing with Kyle Allen, and they somehow figured out a way to beat you, which is the only loss they've suffered with Tannehill. But yeah, I mean, Jacksonville is atrocious. They they were 4-4 at one time, haven't won a game since right now. You know, the Colts, you know, that was a team that was totally injured. All of their offensive skill players were out of the game. Mm-hmm. Again, we're not making excuses here for the Titans' win streak, because they are playing great football. And then what you do in the NFL is you capitalize on other teams' mistakes and weaknesses. But there has been deficiencies.
But this is the only team I think they're going to face that they've faced within the last half of the season that is pretty much healthy. They have their offense intact. Pretty much, they have their defense intact, with the exception of J.J. Watt.
Yeah.
He's not playing.
They're just much better. Yeah, they're more talented on offense.
This is probably the most talented and healthiest team they've played in a while.
Yeah.
So how do they then respond to that? Not with you dealing with your own injuries in the secondary, you know? So
I mean, dynamic playmakers.
Absolutely.
And even Duke Johnson, who's not necessarily sort of their true running back. Carlos Hyde gets most of the carries. But, you know, he's a guy that when he catches passes out of the backfield is extremely dynamic in the open field.
Yeah. So this is going to be a tall task for the Tennessee Titans. But Listen, if they continue to play the way they have been playing, they continue to run the football the way they have been running the football, then playing at home, they should win this game. They should win this game based upon the way Houston played this past weekend.
Dude, it's...
They should win this game.
It's so weird. Like, what, again, what Houston team are you going to get? They played probably their best game. And I read a lot of Houston people yesterday saying that the win over the Patriots 2 weeks ago was one of the best games that Bill O'Brien has ever coached. That, like, since he took over, that was one of their best wins of all time.
Mm-hmm.
And then they come back and they probably play one of the worst games of all time under Bill O'Brien. And they're down 38-3 in the third quarter against the Denver Broncos in Drew Locke's second start. Yeah. What the hell do you make of that? Who on any given Sunday, this is what concerns me, because I'm with you. Everything says Titans are surging, Titans are playing great on offense, they're at home, they got the code blue, whatever the hell that means. That, you know, all this stuff, there's momentum and energy and passion, and the offense is clicking and the defense and all this stuff. You don't want to play teams that just got their butts kicked. Yeah. Like the Raiders clearly got their butts kicked 2 weeks in a row and played much better in the first half.
Yeah.
Created a lot of problems for the Tennessee Titans defense in the first half. Now the Titans...
They just couldn't sustain it.
Yeah. Because they didn't have the weapons that the Texans have on offense. Because if that game in Oakland, if they're fully healthy with Jacobs and all that stuff and maybe a couple of dynamic receivers that they just don't have on the roster like the Texans do, I wouldn't have been surprised if the Raiders made that a shootout and stayed with the Titans, right? Mm-hmm. Like, it ended up being 42-21 because the Titans defense made plays.
Exactly.
And stops. If that's DeAndre Hopkins and Deshaun Watson and Josh Jacobs healthy, then maybe... It's 42-35. Mm-hmm. Maybe it's a shootout. I have a feeling the Texans are motivated and are going to play very well. They've got everything to play for, too. Mm-hmm. They've got a risk of losing the division this weekend. This is going to be a really, really hard game.
Well, both teams are in the same exact position. And that position is if you take care of business... If whoever wins this game and then win the next game wins the division. That's just how it is, you know, because it will come down to a tiebreaker. I think Houston owns the tiebreaker because
the division record.
Yeah. Say if the Titans.
If they split 1-1, then it would come down to the division record.
Exactly. Say if the Titans win this game, then lose, you know, they lose the last game of the season and they beat the Saints. Texans lose this game, but then they go on and beat, I think it's the Buccaneers. They beat the Buccaneers and then beat the Titans at the end. Then it goes down to, well, who has, at 10-6, who has the better divisional record? Because both of them lost to Denver, so you can't count that.
It never gets to, it goes head-to-head and then division.
Yeah, division.
And,
so.
Yeah, they play at Tampa on next weekend.
So I think Houston has the better divisional record because I believe they beat Jacksonville twice. So, you know, if you split, whoever wins it, if Houston wins this game, then and they win the next game, then they win the division because they would have the division tiebreaker.
I have to go through and work the numbers, but I believe that's correct. It's hard to just eliminate the Saints game for the Titans and then eliminate the Bucs game because that's going to be, like, if you look at the difference between the two teams, that is an area where you go, you know, that's a really, really hard game for the Titans where you're probably going to be an underdog and it's going to be a tough, you know, it's a tough win.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas if you're the Texans, you're looking at a trip to Tampa Bay. Jameis Winston is now banged up with the hand and they might be on their backup quarterback. If that's happening, you know, that's a win. That's your one game swing right there that could make up for the loss this weekend should the Texans do that. I think it does come down to the final game.
Yeah.
I think it comes down to the final game. And you want to give yourself that cushion this weekend. There's no signs that this offense is going to slow down, especially when you look at the Texans defense. You know, look at the numbers for the Texans. 256 yards rushing to Baltimore, but that's Baltimore.
Yeah.
175 yards rushing to the Colts. 145 yards rushing to the Patriots, and then 90 last week against Denver, but that's because Denver threw for over 300 yards. New England threw for over 300 yards. They've only taken the ball away twice in the last four games.
Mm-hmm.
So the Texans are 2-2, and they're giving up a boatload of yards on defense. They're not pressuring the quarterback, and they're not getting off the field on third down. That gives you a lot of excitement if you're a Titans fan.
And the Titans are staying on the field on third down.
And they're winning all those exact. They're better on the offensive line protecting right now. They're better at running the football right now. It all sets up, which is why, of course, it's the NFL. And I'm going, come on, man. The Texans are going to come in here and score like 40 points. Because you don't know what you're going to get out of this Texans team. The Titans are the more consistent commodity now. How about that? Like, that's insane that the Titans are the more consistent commodity than the Texans.
Yeah, but when it comes to divisional games, you can throw all that stuff out of the window. And because we, you know, we looked at the Indianapolis game, and we said because of Indianapolis' injuries, the Titans should win it. They won it, but it was a dogfight.
Oh, yeah.
You know, it was at one point we thought they were going to, oh, here we go again, 17-7. It's the same old game. Indianapolis is going to win. Titans found a way to win that game. Blocked field goal. You know, they found a way to secure the victory. But when you're playing a division team, I mean, you can throw a lot of that stuff out the window. And it comes down to, you know, because you know each other so well. It just comes down to executing and making that one play, that swing play in the game. They made that swing play against Indianapolis.
Yep.
The blocked field goal.
Yep. Titans are 2-2. Texans are 3-1 in the division. So if the Titans win this weekend, they'll be tied at 3-2. That'll give the Titans the tiebreaker. If they then lose to the Texans in the final weekend, the Texans will win the division because of the tiebreaker. So you've got to root for Tampa Bay, and you got to beat them this weekend, and then you can deal with Week 17 when it comes.
Yeah,
because they have not been as good. They've been far better against the Texans here in Nashville than they have on the road.
Mm-hmm.
There have been a lot of games down there where they weren't even competitive against Houston, but that wasn't Ryan Tannehill. That wasn't this current iteration of the Titans offense. You kind of have to throw everything out the
window.
That
wasn't Derrick Henry running the way he's running.
You just got to throw it all out the window because it's such a different team. And it is one of the most remarkable stories in the NFL. Honestly, like to where this team was a month and a half ago, we were talking about who are they going to draft at quarterback. And like we were having that conversation.
And now we're like,
$100 million.
The guy.
$100 million.
They're going to the playoffs.
Division champs. $100 million. What an it's truly remarkable.
Like Night and day.
It really is remarkable. And give all the credit to, like you said yesterday, everybody deserved credit.
Mm-hmm.
John Robinson on down to the person serving the lunches at the cafeteria.
Everybody
deserves credit. A D-Mace dissection when we return right here on Morning Drive. This is just for you, isn't it, Munson? Morning Drive, ESPN 102.5 The Game. The autumn wind is an Oakland Raider. Something like that? Is that how it goes?
Just let it. Okay. Just let it simmer. That feels so good. I love it. Don't y'all love that?
Yes, I do. I'm not even a Raiders fan.
I don't know why.
Is it the autumn wind is a pirate?
The Raiders.
Is that how it goes? The autumn wind is a pirate.
Yes.
Yeah. The Raiders.
And it's funny because, like, I listen to that, and I don't even think Raiders automatically.
You just think NFL films?
I just think NFL films.
Yeah, me too.
I think
every
Raiders.
Single time. It's both.
Voice. The Raiders.
I see John Madden stalking the sidelines in a Super Bowl. Like, that's what I think.
Yeah. The Raiders.
It is time for a D-Mace dissection as the Titans are now 8-5. Ryan Tannehill is basically the second coming of God at quarterback. He's playing.
Well, he's playing.
He's playing as well as any other quarterback on the planet.
On any planet right now.
He is the best quarterback on Mars. It's not even close. And the Titans have won 4 straight, all in the AFC. And D-Mace is here to break it all down for us. Take it away, Derek.
Well, the song was fitting because it's against the now Oakland Raiders, which will be the Las Vegas Raiders. So first play I'm going to dissect here. I could have did the touchdown, you know, the 91-yard touchdown, but there was nothing really to dissect there.
Really good throw in the face of pressure. Although it was a little underthrown, but like still worked just fine.
I'm
not going to complain.
I don't know what the defensive back was thinking. And A.J. Brown just flat out just ran up inside release go route and just beat him.
Yep.
That's all it was.
Just enough protection for him to get the ball off and a great play action call on the 9-yard line. Great call
absolutely.
By Arthur Smith.
So I could have did that play. I could have did a few others. But the first play I am going to go to, and it's fitting because it's the 1-2 combination of Ryan Tannehill and A.J. Brown. Once again, it's 2nd and 13 at Tennessee's 23 with 6 minutes left. We're going to call it twins right off. X under, Z stop. So Corey Davis, we got Corey Davis, Sharp, and A.J. Brown. A.J. Brown is the slot guy in this. So we are they are on the right hat. Well, no, they're in the middle of the field. They're in the middle of the field on this one. Corey Davis is going to run a nine stop. They are playing quarter-quarter coverage. I mean, quarter-half coverage, which is they're playing cover two to Corey Davis's side, and then they're playing a quarter coverage to the two receiver side. So, again, second and 13 at Tennessee's 23, twins right off, X under, Z stop. As the play develops, he reads the defense quickly. Tannehill reads the defense quickly. He hits that back foot because he's already in shotgun. He hits that back foot, and this is what, this is why to me this offense has been so efficient, because under the last quarterback, the ball didn't get released quickly on that fifth drop stop, the fifth step, the ball didn't get released quickly. He didn't hit it and throw it. That's what Vrabel had been wanting him to do forever, to see it and throw it. Well, Ryan Tannehill is the opposite. He hits that back foot. He Gone. Sees it, and he throws it. This is one of the Tennessee Titans' staple routes, those end routes, those quick 12-yard ends, whether it be by A.J. Brown when he's lined up at the slot or by A.J. Brown or Corey Davis if they're lined up outside with a cut split.
They used to be a route that Delanie Walker was very good at.
They love to play action this and then throw that quick in route. They get the linebackers to suck in, and they throw it in that big hole right there. Now, the Oakland Raiders have to, they have to identify Derrick Henry. They got to figure out if, is he giving the ball to Derrick Henry or are they passing? That one split second, they hesitate. A.J. Brown does a great job at getting inside of the linebacker and running a 12-yard in route. Soon as he come out of his break, he passes the linebacker. Tannehill throws the ball, strike A.J. Brown, first down. It was third and 13. They got 12 yards on that play. So now it's back to what we talked about, third and manageable. It went from second and 13 to third and one. Mm-hmm. The Titans are excellent when it's third and one, third and two, third and three. Because why? They can turn the ball around and they can hand it to Derrick Henry. The way that offensive line is blocking, it's very difficult for defenses to stop the Titans when they're in a third and one, two, three. Because either I can turn around, hand the ball off to Derrick Henry, or I can throw the ball to A.J. Brown, I can throw these short passes to Humphreys when he's playing, or one of the tight ends.
I was going to say, Ferkser's been more involved than people think. He almost broke off a long one against Oakland.
No, you're absolutely right. Ferkser has done a wonderful job at he caught a touchdown pass this past game. So they've done an excellent job at incorporating the tight ends into what they're doing. But this play, it's this vintage Ryan Tannehill hitting that back step, those linebackers sucking in, him reading the defense, and him, you know, finding A.J. Brown, who has become his favorite receiver. Mm-hmm. He's found A.J. Brown for a 12-yard pickup. Now it goes from second and 13 to third and one. So that's the first play.
It can't be understated how important, regaining a chunk. And play calling is a big factor here, right? Like, you always see this when teams are facing fourth. You know when they're in four down territory, and it affects play calling, right? And you know if you're at third and 12, and instead of running a 12-yard play, you're running a 6-yard play because you're trying to set yourself up for the following down, right? So if you're second and long because you've taken a sack or a penalty, the idea is to just give yourself a manageable next shot at it. And those second and 13s where you get 8 or 9 or 10 yards, those are incredibly critical to keeping drives alive.
Absolutely. Now, the second play is second and 6. Now, again, second and manageable, third and manageable. With this, with Derrick Henry in the backfield, on this particular play, it's Lewis, not Henry. But still, when you have a back in the backfield that is capable of picking up a first down, even when it's second and 6, second and 5, the defense has to honor that running back. He has to honor Ryan Tannehill, turning around, turning his back to the defense and faking the football to the running back. Right now, he's underneath center. So when you're underneath center, typically it's either a play pass or you're going to hand the ball off and try to make it third and three.
Yeah.
Which is great for the Tennessee Titans because they're great when it's, again, when it's third and manageable, the Tennessee Titans are able to pick up third downs. On this one, is second and six at Oakland's 37. They're going to go bunch right, play pass. That's the key. Play pass. Why is that key? Because of the way the Tennessee Titans has been able to run the football. That's been a staple also of what they do offensively. Is that they, when they want to get those chunk plays, they typically fake the ball to the running back because it gets those linebackers to buy it up, and they got to honor Derrick Henry running the football. And Ryan Tannehill has always found a way to find those holes in the defense when he does that. So we're going to go bunch right, play pass, Z over X post. Great job by one, A.J. Brown, clearing it out. Taking not only the corner, but the safety with him. Mind you, he's already made some big plays in this game.
So everybody's focused on
him. So everybody's focused on A.J. Brown. Excellent play pass to Lewis by Ryan Tannehill. Again, those linebackers suck up. That corner bite. Again, Ryan Tannehill fakes the ball. He turns his back to the defense. As soon as he turns around to face the offense, he sees a wide open Corey Davis. He doesn't hesitate. There's no rush in his face. He hits his back foot and he releases the ball to Corey Davis over the middle of the field. Corey Davis makes a good catch, run after the catch. I think he gets an extra 15, 20 yards after the catch.
He showed a lot of burst on that play.
Oh, he did. So it went from second and six at the 37 to first and 10 at Oakland's 13.
But the one thing that stood out to me on that play was how fast he got into fifth gear after making the catch.
No, he did.
And all of a sudden, I was like, whoa, whoa, whoa. Hey, where are you going, dude? And he picked up like 15 yards after the catch.
No, they are doing an excellent job at, again, run after the catch. Whether it's A.J. Brown, we saw with the 91-yard touchdown, or the touchdown he caught, the second touchdown he caught over the middle of the field. He's bouncing off of defenders like a ping pong ball, and he gets into the end zone. That's considered run after the catch as well.
A lot of yak on that one.
Absolutely.
He just said, y'all aren't going to stop me on this one.
Well, he's such a
powerful runner.
He's such a big guy, and he's such a violent runner that, you know,
Are you starting to give me the Anquan Boldin comparisons when I said that? When I say that on draft night, and you're like, I don't know. Are you going to give it to me now?
Yeah.
You don't want to, though, do you?
It's not that I don't want to. I need to see more of it. But he does have that ability.
That
yeah, he does have that ability to catch the football.
Hines Ward-ish? Yeah, Hines Ward's littler.
Yeah, smaller. He does have that Anquan Boldin that, you know, he gets the ball. When he gets in his hand, he becomes a violent runner, and it's hard to tackle the big fella once he gets rolling. He's sort of like Derrick Henry, but can catch the ball better.
And like his pad, it's like once he puts on pads, he gets even bigger. You know, certain guys are just bigger in pads than others.
Mm-hmm.
Like he triples in size when he gets the ball in his hands and is wearing pads.
Well, whatever he's doing, he needs to keep on doing it. I can go over this last play, or we can do it after the break.
Let's do one more after the break. Again, keep tweeting us at 1025_MD while your significant other deserves to have the $100 gift card from a Moments Peace Salon and Day Spa to be pampered. A lot of you guys tugging at the heartstrings, man. A lot of stories that you guys are telling, and it's going to make
some good ones.
It's going to make
sad
it,
ones.
It's going to make
ones.
Us. It's going to make it really hard, and because there's so many amazing moms and wives and spouses out there, husbands as well, that are doing great things and deserve to be treated well. So you're making it hard on us today. One more dissection from D-Mace when we return.
All right, here, fellas, I'm going to tell you something. Now, we want to pamper the wives, and we want to, you know, get the wives to feeling great because they have so much to do, especially during Christmas time. They have so much to do, whether it's presents, wrapping presents, going to get presents, you know, doing things for the kids at school, all this stuff that they have to do. Well, man, we have things to do too. And we can't do it if we're feeling a little lethargic, if we're sick, our immune system is all jacked up, our energy levels are low. We can't do what we need to do. But I'm telling you, if you're feeling that way, here's what you can do. And I've been telling you this for over a year now. Hey, if you want to seek help for hormone deficiencies or imbalances that you might have, then go see Dr. Jeffrey Lodge and his wife, Daphne, along with that wonderful staff. They will give men the treatment required to improve their quality of life. My quality of life has been improved because I went to go see the people, the good folks at Cool Springs MD. And you can too, because here are the services that will help you. Because whether you're in Brentwood, Nashville, Franklin, any area around those areas, they can help you in Tennessee with improving your immune systems, energy level, cognitive functions, and more. They're there to connect you with the medical care you require to have a healthy and enriched life. And man, we need a healthier lifestyle. And there's no better time now to achieve that. What are you waiting on? Pull out your pencils, your pens, your smartphone, get on your computer if you're at your desk, and type in this website, Cool Springs MD, or make an appointment, because here's the number. Make it today. You need it. Make it today. Call them. 615-486-3458, 615-486-3458. And again, the website is CoolSpringsMD.com. No Cadillacs, no perms, you can't see. P-I-M-P. That song is just
go
awesome.
Ahead, Derek. No, go ahead.
I can't sing that song.
Yeah, I don't want them to sing that song because violations.
You're listening to Morning Drive live from the Wholesaling Studio, powered by RumbleOn.com. One more DMA dissection. I had a question on the text line, 615-737-1025. If they'd never made the switch to Mike Vrabel and kept Mike Mularkey, would he have done the same thing Vrabel did and made the switch to Ryan Tannehill? Which I think is an interesting question to think about. But without making the switch to Vrabel, you don't know what the scheme or the offense looks like. Does John Robinson still go out and get Ryan Tannehill if it's Mike Mularkey? I don't know. I would assume because Marcus Mariota made it so easy to make the decision, right? Like, even for someone who believed in Marcus like myself and who was wrong about it, and I said all summer, hey, we're going to learn together whether or not he's the guy. We're just going to watch him play football, and we're all going to find out if he's the guy or not. It turns out he's not, and Tannehill is right now. I don't know if Tannehill's on the roster. Who knows what John Robinson thinks if it's Mike Mularkey instead of Mike Vrabel. Just something to think about. Somebody texted us that question. I thought that was interesting. Just wanted to get that in there before you go to your next play. Also, Ryan Tannehill has been named AFC Offensive Player of the Week by the NFL. 391 yards, 3 touchdown performance. Offensive Player of the Week,
Ryan Tannehill. He should be considered Offensive Player of the Month, he or Derrick Henry.
It can be one of the two,
or it can be both. You never know. All right, the last play I got here, 1st and 10 at Tennessee's 30. We're going to go twins right off. Nine stop, Y and H seam. So they're in three wides with the tight end flexed out in this play. Well, actually, they are in four wides now that I looked at it. I don't know why. No, they're in three wides because I'm looking at Firkser, and that's how I always mess up his name. Firkser.
Anthony Firkser.
Yeah, I said it right the first time. Yeah, Firkser. He runs like a wide out, and he catches the ball like one, too. But they're in three wides. Tight end is flexed out. He doesn't have his hands on the ground. We're going to go stop, Y and H seam. It's first down. Deion Lewis is in the game. Derrick Henry is no longer in the game at this point of time. I don't know if they started pulling him out, you know, periodically because of the hamstring. It could be because Deion Lewis played a lot before we actually realized that something was wrong with Derrick Henry. But again, Ryan Tannehill does an excellent job at reading the defense. This is a cover two. They try to disguise. It's a quarter half, which is one side to the two receiver side, to the tight end and receiver side, they are playing cover two. To the two receiver side, they are playing you know, a quarter of the field, which the corner has a quarter of the field and a safety has a quarter of the field. A lot of teams like playing this quarter-half type of defense. Ryan Tannehill reads the defense perfectly. And not only did he read the defense perfectly, Firkser read a great route. He ran the route the way it's taught. He read the safety, crossed the safety's face, didn't cross the hash, stayed up the hash, and Ryan Tannehill delivered an excellent ball where only the tight end could catch it. Over the linebacker's head, in between the safety, where only Firkser could catch it. He has a big catch down the sideline, in the middle of the field. So it went from first and 10 at Tennessee's, at Tennessee's 30 to first and 10 at Oakland's 31. So that was a huge pickup. And like you said, they are now, they are using these tight ends to get chunk plays. They did it before with Delanie Walker. Delanie Walker is no longer playing. Now they're using Jonnu Smith and they're using Firkser. He's become a bigger part of this offense.
Quietly,
he's become a big part of this offense. And he has made plays week in and week out. He caught a touchdown pass in this game. He had this big catch in the middle of the field. I mean, he's becoming that tight end that they can rely on week in and week out. But if you look at the plays that I've went over Ryan Tannehill, I mean, man, he's doing an excellent job at using that play pass, that play action, to his benefit. Those linebackers are sucking in because they got to honor the run, and he's finding his first option very quickly. Receivers are getting open quickly. It's hard to press these big guys. They're getting off the line freely. When you can get off the line freely because you're worried about Derrick Henry getting off the football, I mean, it's hard to stop an offense like that.
Who would you put your number one corner on?
You would have to put him on A.J. Brown. You would have to. But the problem with that, because A.J. doesn't play a lot outside, he's predominantly, they use him as the slot guy.
It feels like he's had a lot of good matchups.
Yeah.
And that's not to take anything away from him.
What they do with him, they create a mismatch for him.
Right.
And how they create it is with bunch splits. They put him in the middle. They put him as a slot receiver. They use the play action, which backs those corners off. Those linebackers suck in for the run. Mm-hmm. Now there's a big hole that he can find in there, and they're typically running deep over routes or they're running deep in routes.
I just feel like I want to see now the supplemental complementary piece to this is that Corey Davis continues to get looks because of either A, people are more focused on A.J. Brown now, maybe the reason A.J. Brown is finding success is all the things you just talked about, the fact that they're putting him in a position to succeed. And so Corey, even though Corey has, significant, he's got basically the same number of catches, 33 catches on the year, 39 for A.J. Brown. The yardage total is very different, so he's not the big play threat. He hasn't been the red zone threat either. But he clearly has ability. It's like Corey Davis doesn't have ability. He's got just as much talent.
You still have to honor what Corey Davis can do. As a player, you just can't say, we're going to concentrate solely on A.J. Brown. You got to pay attention to Corey Davis. Also, because he has proven that he can make plays if left one-on-one.
Yep, no question about it. Greg Wyshynski from ESPN going to join us as we dive into the Predators' win last night over the San Jose Sharks 3-1 as UC Saros played brilliantly, got a power play goal in the third period, although it was an empty netter, so technically it did count. And also, this whole entire thing that's going on right now in the NHL, a giant reckoning. Dallas Stars just fired their coach. You got three other guys that have been fired or put on administrative leave. It's a real deal, and Greg Wyshynski's been on the front lines of it all, and will try to explain it all to us when we return. Morning Drive, ESPN 102.5 The Game.